This is the Invincible Podcast on TV Podcast Industries, and we're talking about Invincible Season 2, Episode 8. I thought you were stronger.
You're not going to hurt them. And you're not going to hurt me. I don't know what game you're playing, but you're not a killer. I'm sorry I didn't remember you. But I remember that night. You were trying to save me. Maybe the accident changed you, but you were a good person trying to do a good thing.
Saved you? After all the pain and suffering you've caused? The lives you've taken?
Welcome back, fellow Guardians, to the Invincible Podcast on TV Podcast Industries. We're back to discuss the finale of Invincible Season 2. Yes, that is Episode 8. I thought you were stronger. Yes, I am one of your hosts, Chris. And before I even introduce my co-host, I must apologize for the delay. We had a sick kid in the house and it ran ragged. As you may hear by the deep, deep, deep sexy voice I have on me now. I'm coming through it. We're going to get there.
Excellent.
But just think of me as your J.K. Simmons for this. I am the Omni-Man for this podcast.
I love it.
But I'm going to introduce my Cecil or Cecil, depending on who reads it, who says it, and where you want it. Introduce yourself.
Hang on. Can I not be like Invincible or someone superpowered? I got to be the slightly dubious leader of the FBI or the GDA, obviously, for this show. Thanks, Chris. I'm one of your hosts, Derek, the other host for the podcast.
Hey, let's not downplay Cecil, the man. Like, mm-hmm. He can teleport anywhere in the world at $5 million a pop.
Uh-huh.
And he does it just for the laughs. Like, he'll pop from one room to the other. He basically directs the superheroes where to go.
I love it.
At a certain point, he did control the Guardians of the Globe.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
he did.
He had them under control.
Yes, kind of.
They were all alive and dead.
For a little while. Because the other person he had under control killed them all.
Yes.
Kind of. Yes, I also apologize for us being a little bit late with the podcast because not only has Chris got a sick baby, but they came over to visit us and had dinner with us in our house, and then the baby was sick, so I'm taking some responsibility for that as well. Hopefully not, though. Hopefully not.
No, it was your food, I swear.
That's it. Never feed a roast dinner to an under one-year-old. No, not that. But the benefit of this is, of course, that we are recording it after the episode came out, so we have some feedback from our fellow Guardians for Episode 7 and Episode 8 to read, because everybody's now watched the finale as well. What did you think of the finale, Chris? Yourself?
I absolutely loved it.
With no spoilers, because we're going to talk about spoilers.
Absolutely loved it. Yeah. Going to tell all the details later of why I loved it,
mm-hmm.
where I thought it could have been better, but understanding why they did what they did and the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I'm a comic book reader. Mm-hmm. I'm a comic book fan.
Yeah.
Probably first. This is a very close second now.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I have the history there. And there's certain parts I'm like, why? I was expecting a bit of this or a bit of that.
Right.
So no spoilers. But very much going, no. As a TV show fan, this was fantastic. That's
yes.
the way I will say that. What about yourself? Did you enjoy the finale?
Absolutely loved it. I've had the chance now to watch it about 4 or 5 times. It's really, really good. There's so much in there. We'll get into it when we talk about the episode. But yeah, first off, really love this as the finale to the second season of an ongoing story as well. It's difficult to kind of have those breaks in the story to set up. Like, it's not just another episode. This felt like a finale, did loads of interesting things. So we will talk all about it, but let's cast our minds back to last week and talk about some feedback on the 7th episode of Invincible. We'll start off with Coffee and Vodka, who sent an email into us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com. He says, "Greetings, fellow possum-playing defenders. Amidst all the superheroics, worldly events, and interplanetary plot points, what sticks out is the maturity of Mark, Amber, Donald, and eventually Rick to accept their realities for what they are. I wasn't expecting the Viltrumites dealing with Earth quite this early. Kind of seems like a series-ending theme, but that's just me, I guess. The rest of it all begs for a 22-episode season for all the closure required, and loved the meta moment about animation in the comic convention, answering fan questions in advance of season 3. Finally, as one of my favourite characters, I'm really hoping that Mom doesn't get Uncle Ben in this show. 5 curtly killed, cruise-crushing kaijus, rock-bottom robot boy toys, and unwelcome brainiacs out of 5. Peace and take care, Coffee and Vodka. Excellent stuff, Coffee and Vodka. I think we can safely say Debbie does make it out of this season, which is really good. So that's a real positive there. But this show being 8-episode seasons, I think, you know, in general, my rule of thumb is usually 10 episodes is kind of where I like to have seasons land, about 10 episodes. But these are really strong because they're 45 minutes to an hour, most episodes of the show. So we do get a lot more content in those 8 episodes than we get from most other shows that we cover as well. So particularly animated shows. So that's really positive for me. And knowing that we have a third season on the way, as you say, with the little in-joke of, you know how long it takes to animate these things. that's pretty good. So at least we know something's coming. So I'm pretty happy with what we've landed on with these 8-episode shows, because they tell a really good arc and a real chunk of the story in those 8 episodes.
Yeah. And technically, you could say 9. Technically, this season was a 9-episode if we include the special.
The Adam special, yeah.
Which was, what, like nearly an hour?
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's... When all said and told, it is it's a strong amount of time that we get.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'd love more, but we know more is coming. So I'm okay with kind of how they do it. And I think they also just, they're not dropping any threads.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally a callback in episode 8.
Yep.
About something that happened in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's definitely time that there's in terms of the closure required.
Absolutely.
I think that's the key thing. There, nothing will go unclosed. They will close every door.
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing about episode 7, Anissa coming to Earth to go after Mark, I guess that kind of sets up the bigger moment when we'll probably have General Creed coming to Earth in the future at some point. That's kind of probably the bigger moment with the Viltrumites, rather than just a Viltrumite coming to Earth to Mark. I think you're the one that mentioned this to me, Chris, back in season 1, where you have a fight between Mark and Omni-Man. You're going, and, you know, that's just 2 Viltrumites. Can you imagine if the whole force of Viltrumites come to Earth, like what that kind of battle would look like, you know? And we've seen that part of that. We saw the fight between Omni-Man and 3 Viltrumites off planet. So yeah, if we get an army of Viltrumites coming to Earth, it's going to be massive. So they're kind of reminding us of that before we get to a bigger moment in the future, I guess.
Yeah. And hey, look, we even saw it in episode 1 or 2 when we originally saw Angstrom Levy in his original, one of the original dimensions where he was Invincible and Omni-Man, and the destruction. And that's just 2.
Absolutely.
So like, again,
yeah,
when the inevitable Viltrumite Empire invasion happens, it's going to be epic.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for your feedback, Coffee Vodka. Let's move on to Facebook, Chris.
Yes. First up, over on Facebook, we have some feedback from Dr. Bob Phillips, who has this to say. Sometimes saving the world means giving up on your own happiness. Or perhaps not. As Eve seemed pretty happy with Mark in their last mission. And frankly, Amber can do better than a mass marauder. After all, he'd be a terrible president's wife. The Tahiti on the roof moment was pretty wonderfully written too, as was the mega gags in the Comic-Con book signing around animations. Chris, do they have self-referential stuff in comics in the print version? Thanks, Dr. Bob. Question answered, yes, they do. They literally do this scene in the comic books, although it's in a comic book store and not in Comic-Con. And again, it's not it's Science Dog instead of Seance Dog. So those two have swapped, but same gag, except like they actually just use panel shots.
Yes.
So it's like, I think it's like it was a 9-panel, kind of page.
Yeah.
And every panel, it's 1 panel of Mark and 1 panel of, the artist. And they're the exact same panel.
Yes.
Literally, it's just boom, 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 boom. And it's the same gag. And then they go into the next page and it's one of the same images. You're like, oh, hold on. You're going, oh, no, it's okay. You're changing it now. But yes, same gag, definitely there.
Yeah, it's really good. I've actually posted it on our Facebook group if you want to have a look at it and you don't want to Google, pop onto the Facebook group, the gag's up there. It's quite a good little joke where it just says, yeah, just reusing the same image over and over again, and Mark's kind of going, do you think that's pretty cheap of you? So a nice little self-referential moment there in the comics as well as the TV show. And just the comment that you make there, Dr. Bob, about the Tahiti on the roof moment, just in case that's confused anybody, that's a reference to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Donald is our representative of Agent Coulson in the show here, realizing that he's come back to life. So that's the little connection there. I do think Amber is probably likely to become the president as well at some point in the future. And I can't see Mark sitting back beside her as the president's wife either. But good gag there. Like it.
Who knows? But that's to say, if there's an Earth to be where there's a president.
That's true. That's true.
Wait and see. Thanks, Dr. Bob.
Thanks,
Dr. Bob. We also got some feedback from Victor Von Doom, who had this to say. Kirkman and company definitely do not pull punches.
Mm-hmm.
Anissa is the real deal. Sorry, Mark and Amber won't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Anissa really is, on Earth, the first time people have seen like another Vulturemite.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in the comic books as well, you really get to see, like, they. If you think the show pulls no punches, the comic book was like on a level of slightly above.
Yes.
Again, because it was also starting to reference the at that point, it was starting to kind of poke at the other DC and Marvels of the world and how they would do kind of kaiju battles and things like that. So yeah, they're definitely Kirkman and Co. Ryan Otley definitely do not pull punches when it comes to Invincible, the show, or the comic book.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great stuff. Thanks, Victor. And finally, for our feedback for episode 7, Karen, she says, loved the meta scene with Philip Schaff. It was so clever and right out of the comics, perfectly adapted for the series. I also love Rex and Mark's scene, the latter being a superhero by pulling his punches for Rex to defeat Davy Jones by himself. Donald's talk to Rick that we are not our bodies. Whew, that hit too close to home. I must admit that as a comic reader, I know what's in store for Mark, so I was never invested in the Mark and Amber relationship. Still, I smiled at their globe-trotting date and ached when the star-crossed lovers broke up. I must be misremembering, but did Anissa show up this early in the comics? I was on edge the entire time because of that thing she does. Part 2 of season 2 has been fire. Didn't realise it was the penultimate episode, and now I'm sad that we'll have another hiatus. I guess I'll have to listen to Philip Schaff, eh? I forgot to comment that Philip Schaff looks different in the comics. They drew him to look just like Ryan Otley here, right? Thanks, Karen. That's actually really interesting. Yeah, I didn't think about that. I had to Google a photograph of Ryan Otley. He does look very similar to the character they have here as Philip Schaff, so they must have based their design on him. Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. In terms of the Anissa showing up early, she does. This is ripped straight from the thing that you are quoting, or kind of bunny ears about, that thing that she does doesn't happen until later, her third appearance.
Okay.
And it's after a general creak.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all I'll say.
Okay.
So something does happen. It is quite big, and she doesn't come till later. But yes, just to let you know that this is actually like almost a direct pull, Karen. But yeah, I can't wait to see that thing too. On Mark and Amber. Yeah, I'm the same. Like, we knew Mark and Amber weren't going to last, but that being said, they've changed certain things for the comic books. So maybe I was like, ooh, maybe they do. Mm. Maybe they find a way to make this work.
Yeah.
But they don't. But this globe-trotting date, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
It really is. It is just, it's that what if Superman went on a date with Lois Lane as a kid, as a teenager, or sure, a kind of a college student, I should say.
Yeah, and it really does allow the rug to be pulled out from under you completely after the date, because you just don't expect some attack to happen at the point it happens during this date, where they're still having a meal at the end of this lovely day away, you know. But I think it works really well, because for me, again, not having read the comics, the breakup of the two of them was one of the best moments of the season. I thought it was really well observed and really well written and really well executed on screen. So, had they extended a little bit longer than they had in the comic books, or I suppose kept the two of them together, then we wouldn't have had that scene, right? So it was worth it to see the breakup. Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Karen.
Yes, thanks so much, Karen. And thanks everyone for the feedback on episode 7. We'll have more feedback at the end of the show after we discuss episode 8. So, first things first, Derek, do you want to tell us who gave us what, where, when, and how with the episode details for episode 8, the finale of season 2, Invincible? I thought you were stronger.
Absolutely. This, of course, comes from the comic book created by Robert Kirkman, Corey Walker, and Ryan Ottley. This episode was written by comic book writer Robert Kirkman. So, yeah, he has his fingerprints all over this one. This is something that he used to do quite a lot on The Walking Dead. He'd take an episode of the show that was a really important episode, and he would be the one to write it. So, great to see he's continuing that trend over here with Invincible. And very hopeful that his relationship with Prime Video stays much better than his relationship did with AMC, so we can have him involved in the show until it ends. That would be nice, right?
Oh, wow. I do not know what you talk about, but I'm assuming yes, then.
Kirkman wasn't involved in the Walking Dead TV show after about season 3 because major breakups with the show. So, yeah. I think there's still a court case pending about the royalties that AMC have not paid him for their massive TV show that they made. So,
Yeah.
So that's why Invincible isn't on AMC. Let's say that.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Really? Let's hope it definitely stays better.
Absolutely. And the director of this episode was Tanner Johnson, who directed episode 3 of this season, Dismissive This Machination. So doing 2 episodes this season.
Yeah, and we've seen that again across most of these. Where there's usually either they've done something in season 1 or they've done multiple episodes this season.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to the writer's room, they kind of pull together.
Exactly. So, Chris, do you want to tell us what Robert Kirkman gave us with the finale of Invincible Season 2? I thought you were stronger.
Sure. In the Voldemort prison complex, Omni-Man tries to break out, proving to General Krieg that he's strong enough to be put to death. When he's being returned to his cell, Alan the alien, who's also a prisoner, reaches out to tell him they'll break out together. Meanwhile on Earth, Mark returns home to find Angstrom Levy waiting for him. Angstrom threatens to kill Debbie and Oliver. This causes Mark to try and fight him, but he is sent across every corner of the multiverse that is possible. Mark eventually gets the better of Angstrom, but finds out he's been enhanced, and the two must fight across the multiverse. Invincible accidentally actually, in the end, kills Angstrom. He wasn't as strong as Mark originally thought. With Angstrom dead, Mark is stuck in another universe with no way home, until the Guardians of the Globe walk out to return him to the universe. Adam Eve tells Mark she was in love with him. These guardians from the future tell him one thing, say nothing about how he got home. Back in his universe, Mark is not taking the murder of Angstrom well. He crossed his line and worries he may become like his dad. He tells Debbie he's going to quit college because he has to train himself to be better than that. At Immortal's home, the original and still alive duplicate reveals herself. She has been living her whole life through duplicates. But she's sorry she has put Immortal through everything she did.
Wow, the return of Duplicate. Bit of a shocker, huh?
Yeah, it turns out number 1 was actually number 2 all along.
Well, she's number 0. She's patient 0 almost. So they did set it up there so that I was watching the number 1 the whole time in the season, trying to find out was it definitely the number 1 that was killed in that scene with the Serpent Society. And turns out it was, but there was a number 0 beforehand. Yeah. So, yeah.
I
love
like
how this
that
show
one
twists on us. Yes.
But there's a lot to discuss. So let's get into it because there's a lot to discuss with our first top point, which is the prison break with Nolan and Alan.
Yeah, this was an interesting one to start the episode with Nolan fighting against his jailers. It absolutely felt like he was trying to break out there, right? That he's trying to destroy everything around him. And then you find out that General Krieg has been planning this to see if he's powerful enough to be able to break out, then he's powerful enough to be killed by the Viltrumites. So they're going to put him to death. He has to be at full power before they kill him. So that's quite interesting. And as the episode goes on, he sent more and more people to beat on him, effectively, and take away that power again, almost.
Yeah, it's kind of like we know that about the Viltrumites, it's only the strongest shall survive.
Mm-hmm.
It is Darwinian in its nature to the extreme.
Yes.
The tenets of what this empire is.
Mm-hmm.
And that being, okay, we can't even kill you. We can't even put you to death. We can't put you on trial until you can basically stand up to one of us.
Mm-hmm.
mano a mano. What I enjoyed about this is that we do see, like, Nolan is getting there. His strength is back. He does take down those guards.
Yeah.
And surrenders, knowing that he has to go back and face this inevitable fate.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get that really cool kind of hallway scene.
Yes.
With Alan kind of just going, hey, yeah, there you are. I was looking for you. Hey, let's break out. We're going to sort this. Only you and I can hear each other.
Yes.
And in the background, you do hear the guards going, stop looking at each other. What are you doing?
Yeah, I thought that was really good because it plays off the little gag from last week with Invincible and the Immortal and Alan being the intermediary and Alan having to tell Invincible that they can only have a two-way conversation through the mines. So you can't have a three-way conversation between them. So I like that it played off here while Alan talks to Nolan. And also that Nolan just calls him Alien rather than Alan. So as if he's got just total disrespect for him.
Completely.
But I do wonder about the beatings that Nolan's getting from the Viltrumites. It's almost like Queeg is trying to delay the execution of Nolan, because he made that offer to him when he was arrested originally and brought here to recover and recuperate. He made that offer that he could give up everything and join back with the Viltrumite Empire. And here he is, strong enough to escape at full strength, and then he's sending Viltrumites to go and beat him up and knock him back down again. It's almost like he's going, you are strong enough to be executed, but I'm not going to execute you right now, so I'm going to beat you until you have to go back into recovery again, almost, yeah. You know?
But we do learn the one thing about Nolan that we can kind of start to gather from the books, that the stories, the kind of thing that we do know. Nolan has been on a lot of ventures. He is probably high in the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So the Earth posting is one thing, but the books that Mark finds in the season are his adventures of things he found when he was out on his trips around the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of his Rumspringa, if you're Amish or anything like that. Basically, your spring break.
Right.
Yeah, he's basically that thing between school and college. He's done a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to Earth and kicked off everything.
Yeah. And I think he does make that point when he explains to Mark about him being the protector on Earth. When he was having that conversation with him back in season one, he explains that some Viltrumites were chosen and he had the great honor of being chosen to be sent to Earth. So it's not all Viltrumites on every single planet around the galaxy. They've chosen specific high-level Viltrumites to go out to guard a particular planet or to hold on to a particular planet until they arrive to make it part of the Empire. So you're right, Jay. I would suspect he's quite high up in there. So, and again, we know from Queeg's conversation in the past and lines that he said that the fact that they've turned Nolan is a big affront to the Empire. Someone as strong and high up in the Empire being turned by planet Earth is like a big affront to Queeg as well. So, I can see that playing out in the future. But what plays out in the episode here is that Alan's plan did work. Alan pretended to be knocked out so he could get to this prison facility and find Nolan. And it turns out he was sent to the right one and he finds Nolan and then tells him in the post-credit scene, which we'll just talk about here because it's part of this storyline. In the post-credit scene, he tells him he's here to break him out and he needs Nolan to join up with them so that they can take down the Viltrumite Empire. So he's basically here to recruit Nolan for the cause.
Yeah. So we may see Nolan back on the main planet. So we'll have two Viltrumites and Alan the Alien as part of this kind of coalition of planets going against the Viltrumite Empire.
Yeah, and it's interesting, I suppose, that brings in the mindset of Nolan as well. Now, we haven't really heard him speak it aloud very often. You know, he's saying, leave my son out of it. He's gone through too much already. He shouldn't be in this position because of things that I did. So he's really speaking out about that fact that Mark should be left out of this interplanetary war. You hear him saying he needs to make amends for all the things that he did. That great moment between Alan and Nolan where he's saying, you know, when I see lesser beings being hurt or injured, I feel sorry for them. And Alan kind of goes, you're saying that like it's a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing that you feel sorry for people being oppressed and killed. And so Nolan's changed quite a lot over the course of this story. And now, to make amends for the things he's done, it seems like he'll join up with the Alliance against the Viltrumites.
Yeah. Who knows? He may get back to Earth.
Yes, he might, because his final line is, I think I miss my wife.
Yes, that is the one I was waiting for.
Yeah.
If they bring him back to Earth in the way, like, towards the end of this, it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
It's just going to be, like, can you imagine? Just, like, everyone is going to turn against him.
Well, absolutely.
Because he just killed everyone and then did some very heinous things. Uh-huh. It would be like Hitler coming back to life and going, do you know what? I miss my wife and I want to go back to Germany. And you're like,
where's Ava?
Whoa.
Absolutely. And poor Paul, Debbie's manager, who's been trying to go on a date with her for ages now. What if Family Man just walks back on the planet to take her back? I don't think he'll be able to stop her with stop him with a bottle of wine or anything. So, poor Paul.
Should we move on to the next point?
Absolutely. Let's move on to the big moments from the episode. Point number two, the multiverse of murder. That's what I called this 3 weeks ago when I watched the episode, because it is one massive, huge sequence, really. It's the standoff between Mark and Angstrom Levy. So he's got it all planned. He at the end of last week's episode, the big cliffhanger was that he called Mark from Debbie's phone. Mark answered it, thinking it was his mom calling, and it is his greatest nemesis, in Angstrom Levy's mind, is sitting there waiting for Mark to return home. And as he does, Mark kind of surprises him by saying, oh, you're that guy, aren't you? Are you that guy? What are you again? Whereas it's been Angstrom Levy's entire purpose for the last couple of months to take out everything that he's been feeling on Mark, everything that he destroyed. He wants to take it out on this version of Invincible.
And to be fair to Mark, he deals with a lot of villains.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a fair few things going on in his life since this season has started.
Yeah.
On top of that, it was one fight.
Uh-huh.
And it's very much, it harkens back to the Doc Seismic joke from season one.
Mm-hmm.
Where you see Doc Seismic come back like two or three times.
Yeah.
And he's just like, do you not, oh my God, I am not that. And they just like basically almost pick him up at one point and just kind of put him down.
So yeah.
No, you stay there, bad dog. And the only thing I will say is Angstrom has been upgraded.
Oh, yes.
He is mutated.
Yes.
He has brains for his back.
Absolutely. And, you know, I did actually go back and watch the episode at the start of the season. And from Mark's perspective, he arrived and fought off the two of the Maulers and then had all the interdimensional Maulers to fight against. And then this guy in the background, who he wasn't fighting with, wasn't talking with, stood up, the place exploded, killing all the Maulers, well, most of them, and himself. So Mark didn't have a huge amount of interaction with Angstrom at all. So this Mark, certainly on this, on our central Earth, in this version of Invincible, has not really had any interaction with him. But Angstrom has the memories of all the other Marks and all the other multiverses that killed his wife, killed his son, killed everybody around him, killed him in some cases. He has all of those memories. So he's taking that out on the Mark here in the original universe. So,
And so that's a nice way of kind of starting the discussion of the multiversal kind of aspect. We see a lot of different Invincibles.
Yes.
We see a lot of different multiverses. And beyond that, we start to see different universe Mark goes to, because the boy needs to learn a few new tricks, because he just basically flies at Angstrom repeatedly in the same direction, every now and again doing a barrel roll, and just keeps getting put through portal after portal after portal, which does lead to some hilarious moments.
There's great moments in here. Absolutely. Absolutely. But you're right. There is just the portal joke itself, you know, Angstrom creating a portal below Mark, Mark flying out of it. So he creates a portal directly above and Mark flies straight into that.
Yeah.
Love those little gags where Angstrom's able to create the portal so easily that Mark just can't escape from them.
Yeah, no, exactly. In the portals, let's get into. So, do you want to take? There's two animal themed man superhero jokes.
Okay.
So, which one do you take one? I'll take the other.
I have one that I loved even more than both of those, Chris. But,
oh my God. Okay.
Of course. Okay. Of course. Can I take the one I love most?
Do it. Start. Well, there's a few. I want to discuss most of them. So.
Of course. Of course. Well, the one I love most as a Robert Kirkman fan, of course, is Mark going to a zombie multiverse where the zombies are coming out, crying out for meat, as they see Mark arrive. He actually stays there for quite a long time, and we see him around the fire, around a campfire with four other people, and of course, AMC owns the rights to Walking Dead. The comic book is a different comic book, so they're slightly changed characters, but you could probably recognize one or two of them as main cast members from the Walking Dead comic book series. So I think there's a nice nod there that you would have zombies in one of the multiverses here. Mark Kirkman, also famous, not just Walking Dead, but also famous for writing Marvel Zombies as well. So
yes.
So he has lots of zombie comic book characters as well. So yeah. I love that they did that in here.
Yeah, and then for me, Agent Spider. Professor Octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Just so on the nose. It's just perfect.
It's great. Like, absolutely great.
They pull the scene directly, like the look of when Professor Octopus has Agent Spider with his tentacles is from Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi ones.
Right.
It's literally the same kind of style. The voice actor of Agent Spider is Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yes, Josh Keaton. Yes.
Yeah. So we have that. Uh-huh. And just, it's just fun. It's just a nice, and it's also, it harkens back to, like, this is a point that they did in the actual crossover that they did. Not in this, but there was a crossover between Spider-Man and Invincible and a multiversal kind of one-shot fun thing.
Very good.
They did. So that was kind of, this is what this calls back to.
Right, right. Actual Marvel comic Spider-Man appeared in Invincible. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm sure quite difficult to get the rights to do that for the show here. So I did see Robert Kirkman mentioning about casting Josh Keaton as the Spider-Man here, because they wanted a person that had at least voiced Spider-Man in the past. You know, would you get the guy that does the video games one? Would you get the guy that did the 90s Spider-Man cartoon? But here you have, yes, Spectacular Spider-Man coming in and revoicing the character, someone that people wouldn't recognize instantly. It was kind of the approach that they were taking. So very cool. And also a big one, even though it's not a Spider-Man from Marvel, that he absolutely references the fact that he just saw Portal. He knows about the multiverse. He's had a lot of dealings with the multiverse, especially recently, which he has with the Into the Spider-Verse movies and the Marvel MCU movies, where Spider-Man's gone all the way throughout the multiverse, right?
Yep. The Spider Society is everywhere.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, let's talk about the other one.
Absolutely.
The one that is definitely not a DC character. As Robert Kirkman has said, it is definitely not the DC character you're thinking it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course it isn't. Because, like, you're a man who dresses like a bat. Do you not think it's really lazy to call yourself Superman? <Yeah. laughs>
It was so good.
Very good.
It was just, I was like, oh, they did it.
Uh-huh.
WB lawyers are already on the phone. It's like, no. Like, we're just, it could be any man who dresses like a bat. It's not the man bat who you think it is.
It could be Batmanuel.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
exactly. From the
Tick. Batmite.
Yeah.
Oh, Batmite is actually a DC character as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
But Batman, anyway. Batmanuel was from the Tick, and the Tick was on Prime Video, right?
Yeah,
so, exactly. Yep, that's who it was. Definitely.
Yes,
we didn't see him completely. The return of Batmanuel. Really good.
I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
That was the, and then obviously you do go into Mad Max world.
Yes.
Which is fun.
It is, and it looks like Mark spends, again, a lot of time here. Mark being pretty super powerful, as we know, he is invincible. Yep. And he seems to have, you know, he loses his shirt there. He gets that massive black eye that he carries for the rest of the episode in Mad Max world, where he's been left. So, he does seem to be really angry at this stage. So he takes it out on the guys there. But it does seem like they put up a bit of a fight, at least.
Yeah, in the comic book, this lasts for a while.
Right.
Like, he's gone for a fair amount of time, like, in all these different universes.
Right.
Somewhat different thing, done a slightly different way. A dramatically different way.
Okay.
But I think it's the same premise, that he is gone for these periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a couple of hours. And again, time also moves differently in certain worlds.
Yes.
Because,
of course,
we see a world with talking dinosaurs.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Brilliant.
It's a great joke.
God, it talks.
Exactly. And it flies. Its wings must be hidden. Really good. I just want to taste it first. Just thought it was a great joke. Really good gag. I haven't tasted humans since I was a child. So really good fun that they have with this. And I suppose that was the first one. And it gets progressively worse as it goes on through all of the multiverses that we've talked about there. Each one getting worse and worse. And he's in the middle of a battle to save his mom and his brother, you know. So for Mark, while we have some moments where we're laughing at the cameos going on for him, the urgency to get back to his mom is increasing because he can see Angstrom Levy's mind cracking as well and fracturing. There's obviously something wrong with this guy. We talked about it a little bit, but I think the biggest moment really is Mark going, "Do you not remember? You're that guy. You tried to save me. I know you're a good person. I remember you taking off the equipment and trying to save me. You said you didn't want to build." And we have the flashback. You said you didn't want to build your new world on my blood, effectively. So that's what cracks Angstrom, because as we were talking about, he is blaming Mark for everything that's happened. He has merged all of the minds from all of the other Angstrom Levies from all the other multiverses that melded into him at that explosion. And there's so much hatred for Mark in amongst them that he can't remember himself. He tried to save Mark from being killed by the Maulers. They were pretty close to killing him. So when Mark points that out, he loses it completely. How would I ever try and save you? You're the one that did all this to me. So thought that was really good.
Yeah. I'll pull it. We do see some different Invincibles, different styles, different kind of uniforms. So that's kind of a bit from the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And that in the similar kind of area of this, you get a lot of different Invincibles in the comic book from during this multiversal part.
Mm.
So it's cool. I was hoping they go a bit further because there's some very cool black ones.
Right.
Very much like the black symbiote costume.
Right. Very cool. Very cool.
There's all these different really cool ones. I was hoping to get that more. There's 30 different marks that he's captured in a universe.
Right.
Going against each other kind of thing.
And kind of like the Mauler scene that we saw at the start of the season, where there would be different versions of Invincible, I guess, at this point.
That's kind of what I was hoping for.
Yeah. And I suppose it does kind of reference that in the opening, or I thought at least it was referencing it in the opening scene or the opening titles for the season, as we've seen the yellow costumed Invincible breaking to eventually, in this final episode here, reveal a blue and black version of the opening title. So I thought that was kind of referencing that Mark would change completely by the end of the season, but that he'd have a brand new suit, let's say. But it is referencing the fact that everything is cracking for Mark. He's becoming what he fears most, what he hates most, which is Omni-Man and what he did.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. He does. He loses control.
Yes, he does.
And also, though, taps into power and strength he didn't know he had, because he was controlling or holding back. He accidentally kills Angstrom while he is in full kind of rage mode.
Yes.
And bloodies himself, stranding himself in an alternate universe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it goes to show, exactly as you say, when he unleashes himself, he knows that he has been holding himself back. That's what he's shouting at Angstrom, but I think you're right. I don't think he knows how much he's been holding himself back. His father said to him when they were fighting the Viltrumites, "You have to aim to kill them because there is power there that you're not using effectively." So when he gets to this point where Angstrom has just threatened his mom and his brother over and over again, telling them that he's going to punish them to punish Mark for what he did, you know, over and over again, we saw him snap the arm of Debbie when she tried to get out of the situation she was in, which was brutal looking. Wow, the animation on that, I didn't want to look at it. Every time I saw that scene, or every time I saw her arm bent backwards, it was just well done to the animators. Well, you definitely made my stomach go a little bit there. But then picking up Oliver by the leg and saying he's going to punish the child as well, you know, all of this stuff, that's what leads Mark to eventually through that battle, and hearing that he's been enhanced and hearing that he's got special abilities like Mark, so the two of them are fighting against each other. They seem more equally powered, and that leads to the title of the episode. As Mark kills him, he goes, "I thought you were stronger. You've said to me you were stronger than this," and he's already killed him at this stage. Yeah. So, yeah, brutal.
And it does lead to, so that's going to leave a mark that we know or we see through this episode or further into this episode. It does leave a mark on Mark.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're going to have to see some kind of acceptance of this revelation from Mark that, like, okay, he is stronger and he is going to hurt people. He is like, bad guys are bad guys. You're going to have to kill some people.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a red mark in his ledger and we'll have to carry that.
It's a big moment, isn't it? It's almost like up until this point, because he hasn't killed anybody, he didn't think he was capable of it at all.
Yeah.
He just thought, I'll make sure I deal with everybody appropriately. You know, the whole Batman thing of, I'm not going to kill someone. Heroes don't kill anybody. And here he is. He's gone over that line, as he says, and he's killed someone that pushed him too far. So from now on, he knows that he's able to do it, I suppose. So he's going to have to be much more measured if he wants to keep his soul effectively. So, yeah, I thought this was, again, another massive moment for Mark. A great character development for him. It absolutely affects him. It destroys him inside. Again, this is the one thing he didn't want. As you see throughout the flashbacks that are playing when he's flying around the world, trying to clear his head from what's happening, he's seeing all of those flashbacks and hearing himself say, you know, I don't want to become my father. I'm not like my dad. And here he is after killing someone. That just pushed him too far.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of, go with me here. So in Spider-Man comics, there was a run called Superior Spider-Man where Dr. Octopus takes over the body of Peter Parker and becomes Spider-Man, becomes a Superior Spider-Man. In one of the opening issues, when he's just taken over Spider-Man, he punches a villain and rips his jaw off.
Right.
Punches his jaw right off. And they all, like, everyone's like, what the, why, Mike? And it's there, Doc Ock, literally comes the realization that Peter Parker has been holding back his true power for years for the fear of killing the villains. No matter how, like, and he is that strong. He's just like, I could punch a hole in Doc Ock, literally a hole right through, but he doesn't because he measured.
Yeah.
And then we do see some of these pieces, like, in the future with Spider-Man, like, ends up killing people. It's how they learn to deal with that.
Exactly. Exactly. It's almost like Mark's now lost his innocence here completely because he is a comic book fan. He is someone that adored his father and believed in his dad, never thought his dad was capable of murder, finds out that his dad is the one that killed the Guardian of the Globe. And that up until this point, again, innocently believing that he could never do something like that. It's just changing for Mark here throughout the episode. Also, have to give a shout out to the excellent song that's playing during those flashbacks to the Michael Kiwanuka song Final Days. It's a beautiful song, one of my favorite songs. So seek out his music. It's really, really good and really, really emotional. Worked really well as the background to the scene as well. Anything else in the multiverse of murder we should be talking about, Chris?
There's obviously how he gets home.
Mm-hmm.
The time-traveling Guardian of the Globes.
Yes.
So, just very quickly, just a big case in case anyone got it wrong, this is a Guardians of the Globe from his universe, from the future.
Yes.
Because it took them that long to figure out how to travel the multiverse to find him and bring him home.
Yes.
But he does go home back to his universe, but at the time of when he left. So, what the Guardians that we saw are a possibility.
Yes.
They're not confirmed future.
And they say that the mark that they're picking up now and bringing back to around the time that he left, he eventually did get home to a world that's a much worse place. And that mark was forever changed by what happened to him here in this exile almost.
Yeah.
So that's got so much stuff in it to unpick or to wonder about or to question about what would that alternate future be like. There's also, of course, some members of the Guardians of the Globe that we have no idea who they are. I've never seen two members of the team that are there with Rudy and with Adam Eve and with Monster Girl. There's two of the members of the team. I have no idea who they are.
And you talking about the guy with the big hammer?
Yeah. Looks like Thor. Yep.
He's from Capes and Crusaders. He's from a different team. He's in the universe. Again, it was just a nice... They will not, I'm assuming that's probably the last we'll see of him until much later in the season.
Exactly, exactly. And also interesting to note that Immortal isn't there with them as well. So Immortal, yes, the character that continually comes back over and over again and joins the Guardians of the Globe, he's not there. And that seems to be the first time, I think, the Guardians of the Globe have been seen without him. And we know he left last episode as well. So so that's quite interesting that he didn't, either he didn't come back for the entire 20 years or something else has happened to him in the universe that meant that he isn't part of the team anymore.
Yeah.
And Adam Eve is leading the team. She is notoriously not a member of the Guardians of the Globe and keeps being asked to join the team over and over again, which is also quite interesting.
Yeah.
So they made the decision to go back into the past, pick up Mark at this point and bring him back to his world at the time that he left, roughly, because their world is much more changed by Mark coming back much later, which is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. What does it all mean, Chris? What does it all mean?
I have ideas, but I won't spoil it. The one thing we will end with, and we'll move on to our next point, is the bombshell that Adam Eve, or Eve, drops on Mark before she leaves.
Yes, the least shocking bombshell that's ever been in this show. they probably set this up often enough that I was expecting the two of them would be together. I'm more surprised that Amber and Mark were ever together as a couple when Adam Eve was so obviously there. But I do love the moment where she stops him just before he goes through the portal and says to him, I'm in love with you. I have been for a very long time. You need to tell Eve that you love her or you don't love her so she can move on with her life. Meaning this Adam Eve has never moved on from that thought about Mark, has never moved on from this idea that she could be in a relationship with Mark. So that's quite a big moment, really, for Mark to realize that.
And will lead to some serious things in season 3, we can only assume.
Yes, it might, but it does lead to one other scene in the episode where Mark sits down with Adam Eve, who wants to give him a shoulder to cry on, and absolutely thinks of telling Adam Eve at that point, whatever it is, whether he loves her or doesn't, he absolutely thinks he's about it, thinks about whether he's going to tell her, and then stops himself. So that, as you say, will be held over, I guess, till season 3. But interesting that he was going to tell her straight away. For some reason, when I was watching that scene, I was kind of hearing the future Adam Eve going, look, we got you back to your time and place. We did all this for you. We used a time travel machine device and we used portals to get you back to your place of origin. All you need to do to pay us back is tell that Adam Eve that you love her or you don't. That's the payment for what we did for you. And Mark kind of goes, yeah, I'll wait till later.
I'll bank it for now. It's fine.
He's going through a lot. I understand. So so I get it. But I just thought it was kind of funny that that he didn't do the only thing she asked him to do.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's it for our multiverse of murder.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let's get on to our final point of the episode.
Yes, final point for this episode is the one and only Duplicate is alive.
I know we mentioned it earlier on, but I was totally surprised by the return of Duplicate. We did get a piece of feedback that said that there was a future for Duplicate in the comic book, so I should have been expecting it. But to have her come back and effectively say that we've never met Duplicate at all in the series, we've never met her throughout the series. She has been living her life through duplicates and was about to just walk away, except for Immortal.
Yeah. And it does beg the question of how much she gets from the duplicates. Are they like clones or does she like feel what they feel and all that type of stuff? Because
she does. Yeah, that's what she said last season. She feels every single death that happens.
Yeah.
She feels it like it's her own death. And hopefully that means she feels all the other things. So she's been pretty intimate with Immortal for the last for the last while. I guess the original Duplicate also felt all of those feelings and all those moments as well. So so I guess that she knows she loves Immortal and that's why she's coming back to him. Yeah.
And it does, the only cool thing as well, one of the cool things this discovery does lead us to believe, understand, is originally it was only the OG who could duplicate.
Right.
So it was always number one duplicating to number two and then number three and creating a four and a five and six.
Yes.
So it was always the number one. But what we see here is actually it's a number two. And already a duplicate is creating duplicates.
Yes.
A copy of a copy.
Yes.
So, interestingly, then, how many duplicates and how many copies can you get?
Mm.
So, if every duplicate can make a copy.
Well, yeah. Yeah. There you absolutely, go. Yeah.
An army of duplicates.
The world covered in duplicates. Yes. Yeah. That could be,
she
could
feels
be the way
them
to go.
All die.
Yes. Right. Well, absolutely. But, you know, again, we've said how many times we've seen duplicate die ourselves just in this season of the show, or these two seasons of the show, we've seen her die quite a lot. So, that's really interesting to think how many would she even want to create? Could it drive her mad if there's 30 copies of her all die at the same time? Could that drive her insane, feeling all of those deaths at the same time?
Oh my God, yeah. She was just thinking of a bomb going off.
Yeah.
And that's all, yeah, that would be terrible.
It would be pretty awful. Pretty awful. Yes.
It's a good news for Immortal.
Exactly.
We see them in Embrace, and that's, it begs the question of where they go in the next season.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I guess they don't have to return to Guardians of the Globe. She said she was going to run away and has gone to Immortal. He said he's left the Guardians of the Globe. I know he has been told he's gone on holiday, but maybe they'll go off together and hide out.
Yeah, and maybe there's a planetary scale need for them to all come back together.
Yes.
Think like the Avengers.
Exactly. Like the Viltrumites attacking.
Yes.
Some point in the future.
Maybe. Who knows? But that brings us to the kind of end of pretty much all our points.
Yeah.
Do you have any other notes you want to talk about?
Yes, absolutely. I want to talk about Gahor again because I think it is absolutely hilarious. This is a joke created for the show, which was in season one. Gahor is the mummy that's rising from its grave, from its tomb in Egypt. Last season, we saw Mark and Nolan flying overhead, raising loads of sand and covering his tomb, sealing him inside. And this season, we see the daughter of the original archaeologist that went in to find the tomb of Gahor. We see her and a superpowered friend break into the tomb again, him realizing they're women, he can't escape through their bodies because he can only escape through the body of a man. And then Mark once again flying overhead and covering it up in sand again, thus denying Kohor the ability to leave his tomb again. So I love this funny joke that they have effectively of Mark stopping a problem from happening, even though he doesn't know it at all. He doesn't know that he's saving the world from Kahor's exit from his tomb. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah. And it's like a planetary scale apocalypse level thing. And it's like, just doesn't even notice. It just happens by happenstance.
And you chose absolutely the right word there, Chris. Just to say apocalypse from the X-Men. That's exactly what this character is based on. Him coming back to the world could kill the entire planet is the way that is the joke effectively. So, but the fact that he keeps being stopped by Mark flying overhead, I just think is a really good joke. Also to mention, Chloe Bennett plays the superpower character in the women that are going into the tomb of Gahor. Chloe Bennett being Sky or Quake from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but maybe MCU at some point in the future.
Hopefully. Maybe. We've been denied many times, unfortunately. Yes. But,
but with the multiverse coming up, who knows?
Absolutely. There's just one other thing to mention, because it's cute as hell. Rudy and Amanda finally sort themselves out, and they might actually get their second date. Not really cute.
This is cool, because again, I think when we were talking back in episode one...
Mm.
But yeah, I hinted where they kind of go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, I hope they don't change this because it is a lovely storyline. Mm-hmm. The Rudy and Amanda, like Monster Girl and Robot being together and how it all kind of blends and what happens. And I was unsure if they will. Because it does require some things to happen and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I'm just like,
things happen in this show, Chris. Things happen.
It requires some questionable storylines to happen at a speed.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay.
In other words, I don't know if we would get to it in season 3 or 4.
Mm.
That type of thing.
Yeah. But so this kind of rumbling in the background of maybe one date a season seems like a very small amount of time they spend. I don't know whether you have the answer to this question or we're supposed to know the answer to this question, Chris. How old is Amanda, who's 29. Monster Girl? So she's coming up to her 30s effectively, and has, we know that she's aging backwards. I just couldn't remember if we'd seen her as a character of the same age as Mark or older, or is she staying around the same age as Rudy is, a couple of, you know, eight or nine or ten. So good, thank you for having that answer for me.
I don't even know where that came from, though. I think it was basically, she's 29 now. Uh-huh. She's been, I think it's because I started rereading the comics again just as we finished this season. She's 29. She's been using her powers since around 16, 17.
Right.
And she's been like a superhero for 15 years. And she's aging slowly back. Every time she changes, she just slides back.
Yeah.
But like, she's only more recently become that kind of Guardian of the Globe level kind of changing.
Very good. Very good.
So that's why it accelerates her change.
Good answer, Chris. Thanks for that. And speaking of aging, it was kind of cool to see Robot take off his helmet and see that Rudy does eventually look exactly like Rex Bode, who he was cloned from.
Yes.
So I was looking at him going, that's not actually Rex Bode in the robot armor. That's just Rudy as he's aged into the age of Rex Bode. Or is it? Yes. Maybe Rex Bode puts on Rudy's armor sometime in the future and becomes Robot. That would be a bit odd.
Maybe. But. Time will tell. Maybe something happens to Robot. Maybe something happens to Rex.
Mm-hmm.
Only time will tell.
Exactly.
But that requires us to get to the future and into season 3.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what are the final thoughts on this episode? What do you think in the end of Invincible season 2, episode 8? I thought you were stronger.
First of all, in terms of episode 8, I loved it. Mm-hmm. Again, like I said, there was a few things I wish would have been slightly different. Like, I would have loved seeing all the different Invincibles.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a glimpses of them in some of the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Good enough. And overall, I enjoyed how they set it up, how they delivered a lot of the stuff, and really just the kind of signed, sealed, delivered bow on top of the package that is the season 2 story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of, they wrapped everything they thought up. They did it the right way. For me, the whole series of season 2,
mm-hmm,
has been expertly crafted.
Yes.
They amped up the emotion. They amped up everything the right way.
Mm-hmm.
The action was better. The animation was better. The synchronization of the music to the narrative to the, it was just, for me, it all sung the right way.
Yeah.
And even, I'll even say, like, okay, the hiatus in between was tough.
Uh-huh.
But it worked out fine.
Absolutely.
Like, it did. So, like, it worked out in a grand way.
Yeah.
So I think overall, I absolutely loved this episode, and I, mm-hmm, loved this season. And I'm kind of chomping at the bit for season 3.
Absolutely.
What about yourself? What do you think of this episode and then kind of ultimately on the season?
Yeah, I loved this episode. I thought it was a brilliant finale. I mentioned earlier on, I've probably seen it 4 times since the first time we saw the episode. We were supposed to record a couple of weeks ago when we were looking at the finale, and it gave me a couple more times to be able to watch it and appreciate the storytelling in the episode. I thought it was a really satisfying end to this series. And it's funny you mentioned it, Chris, that the hiatus was tough, but it worked. I think how it worked really added to Mark's moment of looking at Angstrom Levy and going, who are you again? Because you're kind of going, we've seen him as the audience a little bit more than Mark has, but from Mark's perspective, it has been a massive amount of time since that one fight he had back in episode 1 of the season. So of course he'd be kind of going, who's this guy again? So it helps us by having that couple of month gap to kind of feel that through Mark, I suppose, which I thought was really good. But I think they're just doing a stellar job on the show of selling the story of this kid who always wanted to be a superhero, take after his father, and now turning into the one thing he hates, which was his father on his worst day, his father being a murderer, and now Mark is a murderer. So that's a massive moment. It's sold really well. It's broken Mark quite considerably, and I expect that's going to be something he will take a while to come back from in the future. But even the enjoyment of the multiversal battle itself, I thought it was fantastically structured. We've seen multiverses quite often now, so they can use a bit of shorthand here in Invincible, playing off other multiversal stories that we've seen in superhero comics and superhero movies in the past. So that probably aided them quite well, so they could actually get to a really quick joke, or they could get to a really serious moment very quickly without having to explain the rules of the multiverse, which I thought was really good. And there's lots of excitement here. The idea that we could have Nolan joining up with the battle against the Viltrumites in future, I think, is really interesting. You know, the return of Kate was a real shock for me. I thought that was a really big moment. So, yeah, really excited for another season of Invincible. Really happy with what they delivered in these 8 episodes this season. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing more in the future when we get back to it next season.
Yes, well, and hopefully, unfortunately, it's not destined in terms of times. There's no schedule. There's no maybe New York Comic Con. Later in the year, we might get a date for next year of when we might see it. But let's wait and see.
Maybe. But let's just take the advice of Philip Schaff from last week's episode. It'll be here when it's here. Animation exactly. takes a while, and we appreciate the animation being as good as it is when it eventually gets here. So we'll wait for it. We're happy.
Yeah.
Satisfied little Invincible fans over here.
Yes, exactly. So we know what I thought. We know what you thought. Let's go on over to our feedback section and hear what some of our fellow Guardians have to say and think about this episode. First up, we do have some feedback from Patrick Lemke, who had this. Regarding a certain moment, them leaving what Mark saw to the imagination instead of showing it was visually brilliant storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't glorify what happened, giving the moment even more nuance. I think he's talking about the Angstrom section.
Yes.
And for me, yeah, like they could have shown the moment similar to, they could have done a very similar moment to when Omni-Man and Vince were fighting on the, in the train scene.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was just blood and it was just pure horror.
Yeah.
You don't need that because that, again, this is a nuance about breaking Mark's character, versus just doing a kind of, and I love this, so I mean, it sounds worse than it comes out. A boys' moment where it's just like Translucent Man exploding all over someone. Like, it's just, that's a moment for blood and to move Huey forward. This is, we don't need that. We just need to show the blood as a moment for, to move Mark forward.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it was completely deliberately chosen. For that scene, because we saw those moments in the flashbacks that Angstrom Levy has of the other Invincibles, the one that's flicking off the heads of people as he's walking along the line. We saw him do brutality on screen in this episode. So us not seeing Mark actually kill Angstrom Levy, just seeing him getting more and more covered in his blood is the importance of the scene. That is the storytelling of what's happening to Mark in that moment and the realization of what it is that he's done that comes afterwards. It was absolutely chosen for that reason, and it worked really, really well. Great stuff, Patrick. Thanks for that.
Yep. Thanks, Patrick.
We also got an email in from Coffee and Vodka on the finale. He says, greetings, fellow zigzag battered defenders. Just when it seemed like Mark was getting his very own Lex Luthor for the duration of the series, Angsty gets turned into brain soup in the second season finale. Who'd have thunk it? The willingness to lose such a well-constructed character, villain or not, says that no one is safe in this show. Still, it showed an amazing amount of restraint to keep the episode on as few points as they did. Well-paced and brutal, who expected Debbie's arm snap? With more resolution than I'd expected, this was a bit too dark to call fun, but a wild ride nonetheless. Can hardly wait to see what Nolan and Alan get up to next season. 5 manslaughter's misgivings, duplicitous duplicates, and Angstrom leavings out of 5. Peace and take care, Coffee and Vodka. Very good, Coffee and Vodka. Angstrom's leavings out of 5. Very good. And duplicitous duplicates. That took me a while to get. I've edited that about 4 times.
I will say that the bit too dark to call a fun wild ride nonetheless. I agree, but I also disagree. Like, I think this is very much the Invincible universe that I'm used to.
Right.
And that we've kind of seen throughout this season, that the whole, it is not your, it's not your Marvel. It's not your DC. It's not your kind of more upbeat cinematic kind of universe. It is the more boys-esque. It is the more that type of adult animation, adult storytelling. And it's the real life aspect of like, what would happen if this type of things happened?
Absolutely.
So I think, yes, it's dark, but there's still been some pops of levity and humor. Like, again, Doc Seismic, that he's popped up a few times.
Yeah.
Like, that type of thing is still there. I would call it fun, but I'd also call it dark as well, and a wild ride. All three.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think they choose their moments for comedy really well. Yeah. When they want it to be funny, they're able to be funny, and they're able to turn a scene very quickly afterwards into a very serious scene. And yeah, you're totally right. A wild ride is a great description of the entire season, and particularly this episode. Great stuff. Thanks, Coffee and Vodka.
Thanks, Coffee and Vodka. Next up, we have some feedback from Dr. Bob Phillips, who had this to say. Oof. Some of the sly satire of the other properties, Love, Doc Ock and Webby, and 145% of the heightened violence to bring home the messages. There aren't any untainted heroes. Women and children are objectified and tortured to bring about an end. Things rarely happen to the ones who deserve the things.
Mm.
And prison procedures should include scanning for telepathic enhancements. You'd think that as well, but yeah, but maybe they don't think that Alan the alien has that ability, so why not even bother looking for it?
Well, that's right. Alan himself is a massive surprise to the Viltrumites, right?
Yes.
That's what we saw when Anissa meets up with them. How did he get so strong? How did they possibly create someone like this that can hit a Viltrumite and hurt them? So they don't actually know much about his abilities themselves, do they? So the idea that he could actually be communicating with somebody else through telepathy probably hasn't crossed their mind.
No.
For want of a better phrase.
No, 100%. And I think in terms of the torturing of women and children to bring about an end, again, that kind of brings what it is, the Invincible Universe, the dark nature, that like the arm snap, you would not see that on like Webby and Doc Ock doing that. Like,
absolutely. Well, you might see an arm snap.
Well, you might see an arm snap with like just some of the more kind of dangling of a child over just the dangling of children in terms of kind of by their own leg.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to watch.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just the way he was treating him like a rag doll that really got to me with Engström holding Oliver in his hand. Yeah, that looked just had no care in the world for the child that was there, you know. Interesting stuff. Thanks for that, Dr. Bob.
Thanks, Dr. Bob.
Finally, we got an email in from John in Chicago who says, I thought I'd have more to say about this episode than I do. It's gruesome and heartbreaking. I almost want to rewatch it, but then I don't think I can watch Other Dimension Marks executing people again. Just wow. Season 3 can't come soon enough. From John. Thanks for that, John. It's really interesting that you say that. Yeah, that I thought the brutality of other universes or other dimensions, Invincible was pretty horrible to watch, really, because you're so used to our Mark having that line in the sand that he doesn't cross to turn into someone that would join up with Omni-Man to subjugate the human race. That's not our Mark that we've seen. So seeing these other versions of Mark that really don't care about human life at all. Plays it like a game when he goes to kill Angstrom Levy's son. He plays it like a game. I'll make sure it happens quickly kind of thing, you know. Just has no care at all. So it's a very different version of Mark. And quite difficult to watch, really, from our Mark.
Yeah. And it reminds me of the Red Sun kind of Superman comic book, mm-hmm. which was just a Soviet-era Superman who was just evil.
Yeah.
Which is the other one where it's Superman, Joker kills Lois Lane? It was also a video game.
Injustice.
The Injustice universe. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's those two where you see a character who you're so used to being good,
mm-hmm.
being a Boy Scout.
Being the best of us, yes.
Being the best and then being so completely changed.
Yes, exactly.
It definitely is changing. But again, similar to what John said, it's like, Season 3 can't come soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, I think a lot of people are going to start asking questions of like, can we have a date? Can we have a time range? Is it 2025? Is it late 2024? Earliest I think we'll get it is San Diego Comic-Con in kind of June or July.
Yeah.
And I say latest would be, some hint would be kind of October, November in New York Comic-Con. But only time will tell.
Well, exactly, exactly. Great stuff. Thanks, everybody, for your feedback so far. You can keep sending it in to us. We will be here. We will be back on the Invincible and the Boys podcast when the Boys returns for season 4. But we will be reading any thoughts that you have about Invincible if you send them in to us later. You can email them to us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com. Or you can join us over on our Facebook group where we have spoiler posts for each of the episodes. If you want to talk about something specific, you can leave it up there on facebook.com/groups/TV Podcast Industries. Join us in there and we can talk about it during the off season. But in the meantime, we are podcasting about loads of other things. We're still podcasting on our other animated show, Star Wars The Bad Batch. Got another 4 episodes of that show left to go. And we're podcasting on Shogun, the epic Japanese 16th century drama that's over on Disney Plus as well. So both of those podcasts are available on our main feed on TV Podcast Industry. So if you want to listen to us talk about some other shows, subscribe to the main podcast feed over at our website at tvpodcastindustries.com.
And yes, as Derek said, we'll be back with the Boys in just a few mere months.
Yes, June 12th, 2024 for season 4 of the Boys. Yeah.
Yeah, who knew it would be so, so close. But for all that and more, just head on over to tvpodcastindustries.com.
Mm-hmm.
Just that's it. Just subscribe and you'll get all the goodness of our dulcet tones. And you'll even get our English maid as well. Well, he's a plastic Paddy now. We claimed him as ours.
He is. He's ours.
He's ours.
Absolutely. But of course, as we said, if you're only joining us for Invincible, thanks so much for joining us for this season of Invincible and for all the feedback that you've been sending in to us too. We will be back for the 3rd season of Invincible, which of course is in production right now and confirmed today by Robert Kirkman. We will be seeing Battle Beast and Titan back for season 3 of the show as well. So that was pretty cool little reveal that we're going to get some characters that we haven't seen since season 1 coming back in season 3. It's quite cool.
It's only good. And if you need your Invincible fix, make sure you can download the game from Ubisoft on your phone. Mm-hmm. Not bad. Has some fun storylines and you'll see some new characters you've never seen before.
Yeah. The only character I don't actually have is Battle Beast now. I've got everybody, including Alan now. It's great.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And don't forget, there's also the Adam Eve game as well. It's mm-hmm. a story-based RPG. Very fun.
Yep.
That will give you all you need to keep you tided over until season 3 comes later this year or next year. Who knows?
Exactly. Thanks so much for joining us. Talk to you again next time.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us, and leaves me to say, keep watching, keep listening, and keep being invincible.
Bye. Bye.